being completed?
People in it. And there's more than a million people, Estonians, that don't live in Estonia, so she thinks the country is starting to disappear. So we really want to give her good support so her country doesn't disappear. That doesn't sound like a good idea. And she's also a specialist in nature-based tourism, with expertise on island community development in Saaremaa Island in Estonia. She did her PhD here at CSU in the department that Stu teaches in. She's now an adjunct faculty in that same department, but she also got her master's at Wageningen, and that's where the two of them met, as I said before. All right, so we're having a few technical difficulties on the slides, so Stu and Jana are going to do their thing without slides, and then eventually they will come online. Anyway, thank you for coming today. I appreciate it. And you're welcome every other Tuesday.
Well, we'll see how this works. Oh, great. Well, once again, my name is Stuart Cottrell, and my wife, Jana, and we've been together since 2004. Came together to Colorado State, and she finished her PhD here a couple of years ago now. This particular project, once he was able to bring that up, deals with collaborative conservation in the National Park.
See, that's so easy.
In Estonia. And so it's working. So the title is Challenges for Sustainable Nature-Based Tourism, Vilsandin National Park.
The side arrow should do it. Upper. The one. Or down. The down, did you try down arrow? There we go.
Okay. And Jana and I, we're just going to kind of go back and forth on this project that's still ongoing. It's nowhere near
to make
history behind that. We thought we'd give you a little bit of an overview of Estonia itself, post-Soviet society, and nature, some of the challenges dealing with nature tourism in Estonia as it pertains to one of the oldest nature reserves or national parks under the former Soviet system. So in terms of, it's really kind of a story about changing landscapes. So, Jana, maybe if you wanted to talk about
it. I can do it better because I have the memory of it.
Yes.
So here's a map of Europe as it appeared in 1940. The world was divided into West and East, and actually the term Eastern Europe and Western Europe happened because of that man. Probably some of you recognize it's Joseph Stalin. He was the leader of the Soviet Union at the time. And so Europe was divided by invisible and in some places visible war that was called the Iron Curtain. And the meaning of Iron Curtain, that nothing passed through. People were not able to cross all that border. So that all the borderline from that red country was secured from the evil from the West. So then this man came by and he changed the world. He has given lectures here in CCU too. That man is Gorbachev. And the world started to change. Actually, that the opening of tourism to the freedom what came to Europe, and the Iron Curtain fell. And instead of Iron Curtain, now we're talking about the Green Belt. It's the same border, but why Green Belt? Because of this restricted, unpassable Iron Curtain, all that border was protected from people, from development. And basically, it was protected so the nature could take over. Of course, it wasn't very well protected from everything. Here is the part of the Green Belt. And nowadays, we call it European Green Belt. You can look up on that project on the internet. Gorbachev started it. So he his idea is to keep that border, this green belt, undeveloped. Create nature-protected areas if they're not there. already, and as a celebration of freedom. And that was his idea. So this green belt idea has turned into a couple of projects, and this material is available online. But this is the green belt as it was during the Soviet time. All those markers there are some sort of military objects, and that gray area is in the width of 25 kilometers. So how many miles is that?
16
miles. And those, of course you can't read very well, but these marks are here, all the, for the rocket bases, and there were, so they basically were taken over by military constructions, and these are still visible in the landscape today. And they're becoming objects of conservation because they are part of the cultural landscape. And they turned into very clever touristic objects today. This is the green belt today. So these light green and dark, light gray and dark gray or black dots all are protected areas in Estonia. And many of them are on that green belt zone. So what it meant for Saaremaa, these are the landscapes how they used to be. Border.
Do you mind talking a little louder?
Louder? Okay. The border was controlled, so people couldn't go to the sea, to the coastline, and these are Russian military towers, but still there on the landscape. But the landscape has changed, it's open now, people are building the summer homes. And actually the landscape is facing huge challenge because the developmental pressure. And that raises issues for tourism and nature conservation in general for Estonia, and especially for the island where we did our study. This is the island of Saaremaa. In translation, it means the land of the island. Very clever. And this area here is the Pilsanti National Park, the oldest national park or protected area in the Baltic states. In 1910, this area was dedicated as bird sanctuary in Tsarist Russia, when Estonia was still under Tsarist Russian. So the developmental pressure is the same as everywhere in the world. We want to be connected. We want more people to come. And this is the plan to build a bridge to the island. What is right now listed as one of the most environmentally harmful plans in Europe. And European Nature Conservancy Agency is very much against it. Why? Because this island, as it once was created the bird sanctuary, it still is one of the most important bird sanctuaries in Europe because it's on the migration route. So all the birds in Europe are migrating through this island, going up to the north and then going to the south. So this is the plan for the bridge. There are some other challenges with this island and tourism on it. Since it has this really well-preserved nature, because there wasn't any kind of development happening during 50 years, basically. So there is an interest from tourists to come and experience this really nice pristine nature. But because it's very seasonal. We have really cold winter there right now. It's minus 36 Celsius. So it's really cold. Tourism doesn't happen very much in the winter time. So people are trying to make money during summer as much as possible. And there is a pressure to create mass tourism events and
the multiple layers of
most money during the summer months. Plus, island destinations, the lure of the island. People would like to have a sanctuary on the island. So there are so many foreign homeowners, as second homeowners, who bought coastline for the second homes. And they've created the little pockets of Germany and Denmark and Finland, and closed, actually, the coastline from local people in some parts to access the sea. What is seen as very negative influence for the cultural memory for the people, because sea was accessible. The every man's right to go to the sea. Plus on that, it's only 15 miles from the Vilsanti National Park. There was a pressure to build a deep port for the sake of tourism, so the cruise ships can come in. But because there wasn't really much of demand for that destination, because how the cruise ships usually go, there is a big city every morning to go. Think when you arrive somewhere, there's just forest. How many tourists would like to embark on the boat? So there isn't really much use for the port. Now they want to build it as a cargo port and cover it with the payment. And that's another issue.
Just so that the bridge that Jana showed before, the bridge is not built yet. So the way you get to the island is by ferry boat. And there's two or three ferries that are constantly running. And even this time of year where that bridge is probably, is it cold enough for the ice road now? So people are actually going across that strait between mainland Estonia and the island by car on the ice road, which has some charm to it as well as this sense of risk. But that cruise port that Jana just mentioned, which is fairly close to Vilsanti National Park, they were estimating something like 14, 15 of these cruise ships that would come there. And I think last summer was maybe three cruise ships, and they were making all these claims about how the people on the cruise ships, a couple of 100 to 1,000 to 1,500, would spend so much money in the locality, but they don't have enough time to spend money because it's usually a half day endeavor, so they're driven around by buses on the island and jump out for 15, 20 minutes and back in the bus and off they go. So everything's self-contained. So the cruise ship has never really successfully brought economic benefit to locals.
So these deep water harbors are already built, right? Like the cruise ship?
It's already built.
Yeah, built.
And really what it is one pier out into one of the bays. So if you think of a harbor, it's not large like it's really one pier that could accommodate one particular vessel that's maybe 400 or 500 feet long, and that's it. And it literally is in the forest because you're surrounded by forest, and there's some villages every 10 to 15 kilometers from each other, but they're very small. You're talking about maybe 100 people that live in the closest village there. Our particular project, if you did it one more time, Jana, is really to look at the role of nature-based tourism as a catalyst for bringing different stakeholders together for managing this well over 100-year-old national park called Vilsanti. The purpose of the project was really to, as I just said, is to enhance this capacity to manage conservation collaboratively, enhance sustainable livelihoods among tour operators, and via tourism to the park, and to enhance the visitor experience. Sounds very academic and very lofty, and we'll talk about the challenges with that. The partners in this, of course, is us, CSU, and I took one undergraduate student on a CCC fellowship, Matt Burnham, who helped us on site, spent 3 months there. The Estonian State Forest Service that manages visitors flows to the park. Jana and her faculty and students at the Kudasada College there on Saaremaa. the Estonian Ministry of Environment and Tourism stakeholders are the different collaborators in our project. Vilsani National Park is the oldest nature-protected area in the Baltics, as Jana mentioned, since 1910. 150 islands and islets, so it's an archipelago destination. It's about 58,000 acres, with 80% of that being marine coastal area. There's 150 bird species that are listed, and it's one of the most important gray seals nurseries in Europe. It's a Ramsar site, a Natura 2000 designated protected area. It's part of the Europarks, which is a federation of parks in Europe. And it's also part of the Man and Biosphere Reserve. And there's 200 endangered plant species and over 500 species of moss and lichen. So its ecological, biological significance is really important.
And just to mention there is that stellar eider. This is that particular bird, what's nesting there. And this bird is USCN endangered species, is very much threatened by this deep port. If there would be an oil leak, this bird will die in thousands, up to extinction. So there's huge environmental pressure from environmentalists all over Europe not to develop anything around that port either.
And in some ways, it's kind of a political ploy, because the building of the port was approved because of its focus on tourism with cruise ships. But really, since it hasn't worked for cruise ships, with many people actually said that it wouldn't, but the Estonian government went ahead anyhow, because it's the only ice-free port on that part of Estonia, which faces the North Sea during the wintertime when all the big waves come in. Now they're expanding that particular port to turn it into a cargo port, and that's the issue. It's going to grow in 5 to 10 times the scale, and the environmental repercussions are is the big concern. So here's Vilsani National Park. Like we said, it's an archipelago. Here's Vilsani Island itself, which a lot of private homeowners, after the Soviet fall of the Soviet Empire, through rights of restitution, they received their land back, so they have summer homes on the island. You can only get to that home by the island, but you see that a majority of Vilsani is water, with about 20,000 hectares or acres that are land mass.
Do you want to see the link or
are
not?
Are we connected into
We're not.
Oh, we're not.
Okay.
So the park has outstanding quality nature, has a variety of opportunities for nature-based tourism, has high visitor satisfaction, and the number of visitors that have been surveyed there. Has a lot of visitors now, and that will only increase. More visitors means there's a need for visitor management and or experience zones, and that's part of what our project is sort of talking about among these 5 or 6 different organizations that are responsible for management there.
And this this picture is taken on the Vilsani Island, and the people in the picture, Stu is in the center, are facing the towards Sweden across the Baltic Sea. This is the most western, the westernmost point of former Soviet Union, or actually right now then Estonia. And those buildings there in the background, this wooden building, this is the oldest building on the island. It's the old boathouse where the boats were going out to the sea. And there's a lighthouse. It was built in 1930s, and there is a Russian military tower. So there are your layers on the landscape from different powers. And
those are students from the summer university, I think the first summer, and part of that course was to talk about tourist experience and what the land can tell you, and the development, the interaction between nature and land and cultural aspects. So just the multiple layers that these three different buildings form. Symbolically represented. So here's some challenges for the park. It has a very decentralized management structure, a disjointed conservation plan, relatively no conservation plan, although historically a Soviet designated person, who I won't give his name, you may see a picture of him, is a very good conservation and biologist who's always taking care of the park from the conservation and biological diversity aspects. nor is there a visitor management. Local stakeholders are not actively involved in the process that the Ministry of Environment has taken over and been designated. Do you want to add something to that?
So currently there is going on the development of the new nature protection plan, including visitor management. And as required by the Ministry of Environment, all different stakeholders has to take part of it. So local communities must be involved in nature protection plans for national parks. But it doesn't happen very smoothly. So that was one of our goals, to go there and as a neutral body somehow to
maneuver
and help them to sit together.
Further challenges. In 2009, there was a complete restructuring in the national park system. So there's a change. So every year, every two years, it seems like there's some major change and shift with the new plan that Yana just mentioned. Management split between a newly created environmental board, who's responsible for nature protection. Meanwhile, the State Forest Service Management Center oversees management and visitor services. And these are actually located in two different locations, not in the same office.
And the State Forest Management Service actually is on a totally different island. So there's no park management.
Yeah.
No park administration. It's managed by different entities all over Estonia. So it's very fragmented.
In terms of specific visitor recreational services, there's a woman with her company called Heritage Tours, and that's the person who housed our intern last summer, who's responsible for information services and leading tours and basically taking care of an old ancient manor called Wilmer Manor that's within the park boundaries. So as we said before, different entities are involved with management. And the numerous tourism operators there, they're not sure who to communicate with because there's so many that are operating legally / illegally, doing their own thing within the boundaries of the park. And there's no specific guidelines.
And this is not only Estonian tour operators, also international. They come in with their own tour guides. They put together their own packages and they don't have to negotiate or have any sort of communication with the park manager.
Okay, so before we actually submitted what's the CCC fellowship proposal in January of last year, Yana knows the manager who's responsible for Vilisandi National Park, who lives on Saarna, and she gave an approval that, you know, this is interesting. And there was already plans to create this stakeholder group. So then we submitted, Yana contacted her to get information that we could put into our proposal. We didn't hear from her in time, but the proposal still was approved, thank goodness. And we got the, but we didn't hear if it was approved until what, March? About March. And so then we did receive an email in February that, if you wanted to highlight what some of those emails.
Yeah, and the lady was really welcoming our project and very hopeful towards the process. And then there was a big silence again. And the silence was up to the point when we got there in the summer. And we found out that she had huge stroke. And basically, she's still not back to work. We don't know. It's really bad.
So our primary contact.
But Stu received this email in April, and this email, this copy paste from the actual email from the local newspaper reporter who wanted to know about this project, what she refers here that she heard about it and wants to know more about it. And then Stu, what you replied to her?
Right. Yeah, I received the email. We just heard that we got the grant maybe a week and a half before. We had not even, one, found out who the replacement was for Kali with the Ministry of Environment. So we just begun to develop the email link that this project's been funded and set up, and somehow this reporter found out that that I was coming. And they wanted to know and do a story on it. So I wrote and I said, please, please, we haven't even set up our network yet. And no one even locally knows exactly what it is, our intention is, what we plan to do, and what we would like to do. However, the very next day, so I sent that email. I said, please wait, I'm coming in July. My wife will be there in June to start setting things up. So please wait. No articles in the paper. So
as you can see, 2 days went by, and this is actual article from the local newspaper. She ignored Stu's request, and she wrote an article, but it's very, here is the
translation.
You can read it and tell me how you feel about it.
Colorado University has assigned me, the professor of natural resources, to come to our island and manage our stakeholder groups because we don't know what the frick's going on with what we're doing. He's going to come there and make everything good. The aim is to jointly develop a plan for visitor management in the United States and Colorado State.
So this is some sort of secret plan, and it will be revealed to possible partners and stakeholders.
Yeah.
This article, of course, I read it online and I was shocked. And immediately there were, if we could link to internet, you can see there were responses from the general public that it's like imperialist US is coming in. And
hey, I'm a nice guy, right? Give me a break.
But that set the tone. We were not approached. We're not approached by people from National Park, by nobody. But when we got there, there was an extremely negative vibe that we are coming to tell them what they have to do.
In an already fragmented, disjointed system. So just as a tip, you have to be careful. And one of the lessons learned is how they found out sort of some of the details is the reporter did a search, and there was already analysis at CSU. That little description of the project listed with all the CCC fellows. And then you see how printed media can get turned and completely twisted upside down. It's probably that she didn't mean any harm. It's just more of, but you never know.
But we that's know. Also her very limited English, how she translated it. She made some complete, her use of language and terms. And
because the whole goal of our project, hey, we're here to help. What can we help to do? And what needs do you have to facilitate further collaboration? We can bring students, we can make linkages. Here's what we can do. And that's what we were hoping for in the beginning. So the basic process that was originally outlined is that Matt, our summer intern, went over first, and we set him up with at Lona Manor within the park with that one tourism entrepreneur who's got a contract for information services for 5 months. Yana came 3 or 4 weeks later and hosted a first meeting with the stakeholders that she'll talk about. And then we had a meeting again in August. And we did a visitor survey for English-speaking visitors. And meanwhile, in parallel, was another funded study that Yana's been doing, his second homeowner study. So, and we'll share a little bit of that with you, meanwhile, keeping an eye on our time.
So, 4th of July, I was able to arrange the first meeting with the potential stakeholders in that process. And there were, I heard about that negative vibe from that article. That was really interesting meeting, because that lady who had the stroke and was withdrawn from her duties, there was a new man taking over her duties, but he had worked in the system already many years. Through that meeting, what kind of we put up there, those people met physically first time. So that tells you something about the collaboration, about park management. Then we found out that there is that need from and a request from the Minister of Environment that the stakeholder groups have to be part of that nature protection management plan. And there we also found in during that meeting that State Forest Service did a study, visitor study, the year before.
And no one knew about it.
And no one knew about it. So the nature protection people didn't know about it. It happened on the backyard. And then the lady who did that survey said, you know, there are really concerns from their visitors that there is a need to different services. And then that man who is responsible for the nature protection said, but there's so few of those nature-based tourists. They don't contribute anything. They're just few in numbers. And then she said, so you guess how many we counted, because they also did the visitor flow in one spot only in that national park. This is the Crooked Lighthouse, the Pisa Tower of Estonia. So the waves and the storms are shifting the peninsula. Literally, they are shifting the land. This is sand with storms. In 1 month, they can shift the whole peninsula to another location, the winter storms. And this, on this left, the picture, the count was somewhere there. How many people took their hiking route towards that lighthouse? It's approximately
3 kilometers.
Yeah, so it's
2 miles.
2 miles to hike in. And she asked, what do you think, how many? And those people from the island, nature protection people, said, maybe 2,000, 15,000. So then they started to think, oh, maybe there's a need for some sort of visitor survey, really, and flow of people who should know. And maybe there is really that local people can do about something, can provide some services, and can seek some benefits. So that first meeting was really like an eye-opening for them, surprisingly to me, really.
So then we were there, and based on that meeting, and I was not there, but Matt was with Jana, that they asked us to do, since that survey in 2010 focused on Estonian visitors, there was no information about
foreigners.
The foreigners. So in essence, that's what Matt was to do as part of his internship, is not only learn about guest services there, because there that is like a small guest house there with the restaurant and visitor services in it. And he interacted with English-speaking visitors and did a survey. And that's how we were like, we can offer that. That's something we can do.
Because people were, that the Forest Service was interested if the results from the foreign tourists would collide with the
Estonians.
Yeah, Estonians. That if there are some same problems, and what the emphasize.
So this the manor we just showed you is over here, and that's what's under contract with a woman who's not from that parish, that small municipality. And she's now going into a fourth year of the contract.
It's a private entrepreneur.
It's a private entrepreneur, okay. So this other building is just maybe 100 yards from the Lona Manor. This is the State Forest building and where the visitor center is. These people don't like the woman and her family that runs the other business. They won't communicate with each other. There's no signs in English. What they're doing is despite what she's doing and vice versa. So this is where we had our second meeting in August. I don't know if you want to.
And really funny, up to that point, that during that 4th of July meeting where the need for stakeholder involvement was expressed by all those people, Forest Service people and environmental board people. And they know that ladies is responsible for the visitor services, and she has a restaurant there. And I said, we have money, we'll pay for the rent of the rooms, for the meeting, and there was a coffee break from the lady. And when we arrived there in August for that meeting, then those people arranged their own coffee break.
And they paid for it themselves. We had money from our grant to support this. So we held our meeting here. There was a coffee break, but we'd already paid for a coffee break up in Lona Manor. So we had two coffee breaks. Nice for everyone. Yes.
Is there a reason why the two don't get along, or is it just...
Yeah. It's a long story.
It is a very long story. It goes back to, again, some sort of Soviet-style leadership, because the former park manager, when there was still park management on the place, used park resources for his own private business. And so all those services were leased out to that private entrepreneur. And he sees there this kind of private issue.
And so he's still there and he's managing this
because
he's a state government employee. And they just refuse to, even though she's doing a very good job, it's just trying to get them to collaborate.
And then there was also one of those issues for our student, Matt, from here. First of all, he doesn't speak Estonian. He doesn't understand what's going on when between there, you know. He can just sense that something is wrong. And it influenced his ability to do really all what he wanted to do.
So then we had the August 11th meeting, and this is the gentleman we're talking about right here.
And on the left is the,
he's the existing
environmental board person.
Member.
So State Forest Service showed the results of the survey from 2010, and then followed by our results. And then we had discussion. And to our great surprise, what we didn't expect there, we were expecting more to see local entrepreneurs to find out what kind of services they can offer. But the most vocal group there who showed true interest was second homeowners of the area. Foreigners, Swedish ladies.
I don't think we need to talk too much. Let's get on to that more interesting. This is just the sum of Matt's research.
So what we did there.
Yeah, so go ahead. Basically, people were highly satisfied, and they're predominantly the foreign tourists, just like the locals. Nature is their primary with bird watching, so everything around nature-based tourism. There's minimal to no facilities there, and the biggest complaint is come on, have some signs or a folder that's in English. You know, so if that's done, that would be a major benefit to the visitor clientele. But let's move on. Just some highlights of that. Comments from the Estonian Forest Service manager, Arvo, who we showed you, is he was interested in our presentation because there's another shift in management planning where they have to make Vilisane National Park bring benefits to locals. That's part of why we're doing this collaborative. We think that's important, but now they're being forced to, so they sort of have to. At our meeting, there were no community tourism operator representatives. We had so much in the agenda that we didn't have much time to present because the others were presenting, but we used our session as a way to bring collaborators together, so that was important. We won't talk about that at the moment, but the key aspect was during that meeting is the woman who came up from that local Lumanda second home housing group that's right on the edge of the park showed the most concern for stewardship, and then Jan, maybe you can add to that.
Yeah, and parallel to this this project, I did a second homeowner study that summer on the island. And to my, again, great surprise, that usually people think, okay, the second homeowner is just there, you know, have vacation, don't really care about much what's happening in the community. So that, really the pristine nature was considered the most important thing why they want to have the second home in the area. And again, I have to emphasize that in Estonia, you can have your home, second home or primary home, inside of national park. People live in the borders, within the borders of national parks. But the development is very, very controlled. It must be very controlled development. Second homeowners really expressed the interest to participate in nature conservation initiatives, local ones. And the main concern about the what is happening or might happen in the area was about inappropriate management of natural resources or any kind of development. But at the moment, not many are participating. So that we try to find out what is the reason for that. And they said that they feel that the local municipalities are really not interested in them. It's almost like they're ignoring them, trying to avoid them. And again, why it's that? Because these people are wealthy, they have political power and money power to change things in these rural areas. So people really expressed concern about the collaboration, lack of information, and even the interest in them, what they could offer. And that's why that group who was there, they told what they do already in the national park. They clean trails. They put up some signage. They offer fresh water just
to visitors.
To visitors to the park.
They invite them in for coffee. I mean, it was a real eye-opener to everyone. It's second homeowners from other countries that were probably giving the most value-added contribution to visitor experience that no one knows about.
And why they're so important group? Because in those areas, and especially in the nature reserve areas or the vicinity, there are like 60% second homeowners and 40% locals, or even more. In some places, 80 to 20.
Yeah.
So one of those concerns from the second homeowners that they don't want any kind of inappropriate development. And this kind of these pictures from this kind of development, what's happening. For some reasons, on the vicinity or just on the border, or sometimes even inside the park, when these pristine nature places are divided into those slots, there are mailboxes. So these are prefabricated homes, totally alien architecture, alien materials to locals, don't fit the landscape. And when I received the surveys back from the from second homeowners, they said, we don't want to have this kind of development. And they used really harsh words when they described it. I will not repeat it, it's not very polite.
You can always say it in Russian.
Yeah, Russian. So this is the signage to this lighthouse. So these mailboxes are right there, you know, and those houses are just right there. So you can't even pass through without seeing them. And then they sent me pictures. This is how it should look like. This is my home. Look, my home. It's nothing like that one. We don't want it. To whom these are built for? We are also, we came here as tourists. We don't want this.
So here's, and then we'll have it, because I think we only have about 10 minutes. Here's what we hope for at the beginning of the project, but the project's not over. It's just the starting point. We'll go on and on indefinitely until I'm under the ground, and hopefully it's still going. We hope to have a set of principles for sustainable tourism and nature conservation that the park would use. We haven't even come close to working on that yet because it's too early. We wanted to set a priorities with regard to funding decisions and implementation in any plans. That's a misnomer. We're far from that. We just got to get people to sit at the table with each other. We wanted the provision of these guidelines for tourism stakeholders on how they could use the park, but use it with under these sustainable guideline principles. That's down the road, not 1 year, but probably 10, 15 years. Next one. And we wanted to see that, for locals to see that there is potential to have a tourism business. How can they expand the nature-based tourism to try to show the municipalities that large-scale resort tourism is not what that island's all about, because it's very nature-oriented. That's why people are coming there. Plus, the story we don't really have time for is how to connect that park up with this international certification platform that is Penn Parks and the Protected Area Network. So I think maybe, what's the next slide there, Donna? So we'll go back to the previous one. We have roughly 10 minutes left, so I guess for the audience, my question is going into this as a researcher, as past experience, and what little I know about collaborative conservation, so I never would have dreamed of the important role of what second homeowners could have. In essence, it's been more of a negative association because people coming in allowed to buy property and have their home in a buffer zone, maybe inside the park. But what does the audience think in terms of that message or that sort of eye-opener of the role of second homeowners? Yes?
That they seem to care about the conservation just as much as the locals, it seems.
Yeah. They seem to care about the cultivation and the nature. Is that a self-interest care, you think? Yeah, Mason.
I'd say that's kind of self-interest, because they seem like they're all financially stable. Like, they're not really worried about like the economic impact of, you know, not allowing any more business growth or development or anything else.
Okay, so you think it is some self-interest? Yeah, Stacey.
Well, and I just wonder how much like influence or how much vote or, you know, they get towards the decisions made on the island. Or does that even, do they even get their say in anything like that?
At the moment, no.
No. Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. It's just determined by them, the environment.
And as a second homeowner, if that's not the primary residency, they don't have anything to say what's happening in the local community.
Right. Amen.
It sort of sounds like the second homeowners are doing a whole, similar to how Colorado and are, where, you know, I'm in, I don't really want other people to come in now, but right. It's pretty, I'm going to keep it this way,
right.
So it is self-beneficial.
Right. So that's the issue. Here's the self-interest. You go and you build you have your own little paradise, and that's happened all throughout for our second homes through Colorado. So, Mandy, thanks for. So there is a linkage. But on the other side of the coin, then you've got, in our particular case, they're second homeowners. They're the ones that are doing the work for conservation benefit for the park. Is that a negative or is that a pro? And how do you work with that? Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the work that you did last summer opened up dialogue between the second homeowners and the people there? And like, do you feel like you set a foundation for the future? And like, where do you see it going from all of that, but the conversation between the second homeowners and the local municipalities?
Well, just the two meetings we had got the four or five different entities sitting at the same table.
Right.
So in that regard, yes. And the second homeowners, and through Yana's work, which was just presented 3 weeks ago, the local municipalities are starting to realize that they need to know who the second homeowners are and what kind of benefits through taxation can that bring to the island, because they really should, because a lot of people won't register their second home because they don't want to pay local taxes. But then, the other is we plan to go back and do second homeowner surveys within second homeowners close to that park to find out more, to tease that out, as well as the stakeholder, the tour operators, which we haven't gotten to yet. And I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arin, you had a question.
Yeah, I think going off and reading a lot of things that have been bad, and they obviously could stay you kind of isolate second homeowners in a way it's meant to be able to tease out like, what's in it that's moving. But at the same time, like, what are, maybe you talked about this earlier a little bit, what are the stakes involved of folks that were supposedly not motivated to participate in these, I don't know, conservation or what is it really in their livelihoods or something that makes them not want to care, supposedly, or not want to participate?
Yeah, let me see if I can answer that first. In terms of our study and our collaboration, we didn't know. We think that we kind of mended some fences after that initial email dialogue that came out. In some ways, some of the things that we're doing is during the high tourist season. So they're busy, the locals there. They're too busy. So the summer season is not really a great season to be having this collaborator stuff. Secondly, you've got people who've lived there their whole lives under the Soviet regime where it was illegal to go to the beach. You were shot if you did. Yana's situation with her family. And now suddenly every year the policy in related to nature conservation is changing. So they don't know what to believe. So here's outside influence from Estonians themselves. So there's a lot of this mistrust and changing dialogues. But to answer that, I don't know, and that's what we'd like to tease out. But we think that the second homeowners have a powerful voice, whether we like that or not, because they've got the money, they've got the staked interest. When you're talking about the benefit for conservation, where are your strengths? The movers and shakers, and you've got to try to get the other movers and shakers on board. Otherwise, it's a difficult dilemma. Yeah. So that's where we're sort of sitting now. And I don't know if, Yana, you want to add to that.
Yeah, maybe I can add a bit, because the traditional livelihood was agriculture. And that kind of disappeared when Russian market dropped off. So, and with all those different rules and regulations in European Union, where old European Union states like France and Italy, and their farmers are supported, and those farmers from the new states of European Union are not supported, so you can't really compete with your production. So the traditional livelihood is disappearing. What is there for them is this pristine nature, what they can sell to parcels, and that's what they're doing. They sell forest, the timbering companies, they sell coastline to build up those kind of
houses
there. They want to survive, and they see that, oh, what kind of nature protection, you know, I have to survive. They don't see what's happening next. And there is already eye-opening there. They've seen some, and with that deep port, because there was a huge promise. Cruise ships come in, there will be jobs for more than 300 people. One person got the job. One.
After 3 years. In tourism related, yeah.
And so locals' eyes are opening too now. And they are there against that enlargement of the port together with second homeowners. This is a like really good example of there what's happening. And to talk about the evil cruise ships, last summer 6 ships came in. Actually, only 2 came to the pier, and the others were just out there. And they dumped on the island 4 tons of waste. It was just solid waste. And from that, 0.5 ton was like extremely dangerous. And where it goes from the island?
I think we have time for one more question. Well, this is a works in progress. We thank you for your attentiveness. We thought we would just kind of tell you our story. Challenges of collaborative conservation. And there's many of them. That's why we think it's an interesting case.
Thank you. Let's give them a hand.
Four months. my class, the write-up on this is due on Thursday. Where do we meet on Thursday?
New Valley Village.
Yes,